Welcome once again to Sid Coral Week in Focus. And I know we keep saying it's getting boring, but it gets more interesting for us, at least, Sid. Now, we're going to mention, we've got to, the last time, I hope, Gary Lineker, but before we reach such exalted heights, there's a lot of leftovers coming in by lady presidents, the lovely Jacinta. Left a lot of flack behind her in New Zealand. And of course, our wonderful friend Nicola from north of the border. The thing goes on. Mm-hmm. It's woke in extreme. There are two things here. Baroness Kennedy apparently was put in charge of killing misogyny, inverted commas, once and for all in Scotland. And she was paid £1,000 a day to get this report together. Wish somebody give me that opportunity. But she got it. And she's come out, which looks a bit difficult, with solutions. And it's going to carry on, apparently. Basically, if you're a fella, you're not going to get pass mark. You're going to fail. Because you can't even look at a young lady walking down the street. And if you're making some allegedly sexual comment, maybe in a pub, to your mate, she can have you and she can put you in jail. The lady that feels that she's been misogynized, there's a good word for you, and she can put you in jail for 7 years. What's going on, Sid?
Yes, I think the pendulum has swung far too much in a certain direction. And I think we've got to a point now where it's probably going to very soon start swinging back. See, it's quite interesting, actually, sometimes when you stop for a moment and look at the history. Because, you know, it's the history is that, I mean, Henry VIII, for instance, I mean, he had his buggery act where it was... capital offence to engage in any sexual misdemeanour. And bit by, well, it only really changed in 1828 when they changed that from being a capital offence to it being life imprisonment. And then it shifted gradually until 1967, when suddenly homosexuality was legal, abortion was legal, divorce was made easier, adultery was no longer against the law. But when you think about historically, you know, 1967 is not that long ago. And when they made homosexuality legal then, it was only strictly between two consenting adults in private. There must be nothing outside of the two consenting adults in private. And where we are now, it's promotion of homosexuality in schools is compulsory. I mean, any school that doesn't promote homosexuality is going to get bad marks from Ofsted. And we've gone to this ridiculous transgenderism as well, which is being pushed in the schools, you know, men becoming women, women becoming men. And the whole position of men in society is being pushed back and pushed back and pushed back. And it's got to a stage now where, well, I think we're getting quite close to Sodom and Gomorrah, frankly. I mean, you know, I refer to Sodom and Gomorrah as extreme homosexuality. You know, if you don't bring these men out and let us have sex with them, then, you know, we're going to beat you up. You know, we've got a right to have sex with whoever we want, whenever we want. And that was basically the position in Sodom and Gomorrah. We're not quite there yet, but we're getting close. And of course, it is international. Like you say, you refer to New Zealand, it's going on in America, it's going on all over the world. But the pendulum will swing back. And I believe at the moment, Africa is at the heart of Christian morality. And there's more Christian morality going on in Africa probably than any other continent in the world. And God bless the African, God bless the African church, God bless the African political leaders that are saying we're not having homosexuality in our country and so on and so forth. And I believe they are becoming the conscience of the world. But you know, the standard is raised. The standard for Christian morals is raised. And I believe we will swing back away from this position. It's not just going to get worse and worse. It can't.
No, thinking about Africa and Uganda in particular, they've just snuck through the powers that be yesterday, a law very pro-LGBT. The nation is up in arms, the vast majority, and again, it's the vocal minority. Now, Uganda is important in Africa. Africa in general seems to have got it right, as you mentioned. One of the map cartoons, which I do like this week, is you mentioned schools, shows a headmaster and a couple in front of him remonstrating with the couple. Your son has failed in his sex education exam. He only got 47 out of 100 different genders. face it all, Sid. Sticking with Scotland a little longer.
Can I just comment very briefly on that? It's very interesting. There was a drag queen giving a lesson to school children. And this drag queen said there are 73 genders. A little girl put her hand up and said, I believe there's only two genders. And do you know, the drag queen forced her to leave the classroom. She was made an example to the whole class and told that no one should be allowed to say that there's only two genders. Now, that means that we've departed from educating children and we've now gone to indoctrinating children, because if you're not allowed to speak out what is clearly the truth in a classroom and you're expelled from the classroom for speaking the truth, then we're not educating anymore.
No, but Sid, let's remind ourselves with the left, the extreme left, indeed, 'twas ever thus. They love cancelling because they can't make a cogent argument.
Yes.
And yes. Let's stay with Scotland for a bit longer. There are three protagonists. One has just added himself to the list. One's a Christian, one's a Muslim. Very strong Muslim. What do you make of what is happening there?
Well, it's interesting because it's definitely a battle for the soul of the SNP and to an extent a battle for the soul of Scotland. Now, of course, we have to remember that Nicola Sturgeon was forced to resign because she was trying to push through a transgender law that was met with a lot of opposition and indeed met with the opposition of the UK government. And the UK government didn't allow royal assent to the law that they were trying to put through in Scotland, so it didn't go through. Now, Ash Reagan, the third candidate that you've not mentioned, she opposed it. Kate Forbes was actually on maternity leave, but has made it quite clear that had she not been on maternity leave, she would have opposed it. Hamza Yousaf has said that he would support it. Now, that means that on paper, he is the woke candidate. But there's one thing that we have to realise, unfortunately, about Islam. You see, a lot of people don't appreciate the fact that you shall not bear false witness is a Judeo-Christian concept. And Jesus said, I am the truth. And we've grown up being told by our parents, you must always tell the truth. That is not the situation in Islam. In Islam, you tell the truth to fellow Muslims, but it's a good thing to tell lies to non-believers in order to gain an advantage. So you cannot trust a word that Muslims say on these issues. Now, Hamza Yousaf, when this issue came up, absented himself for religious reasons. He didn't vote. But he's now saying, oh, no, it wasn't religious reasons. It was just I got other business on that I couldn't attend, but I've always been pro-LGBT, which is very much the position that Sadiq Khan has taken. I'm pro-LGBT. But you know, he's not really. Now, it's interesting. Hamza Yousaf has also hosted a delegation from people from Hamas, from extreme violent terrorists that he was expressing support for in the past. So we know that in reality, Hamza Yousaf, I believe, I mean, I can't say for certain, but I believe Hamza Yousaf is a radical Muslim. So a radical Muslim doesn't have to tell the truth. He can tell lies and he can say what he wants, which he believes is popular to get elected. Now, the latest thing that he's come out with is that he wants to not only split Scotland from the United Kingdom, he also wants to remove the monarchy as head in Scotland. So, and he said he wants to do it in 5 years. So this has really put the cat among the pigeons in this debate, because suddenly we have one of the SNP candidates for leadership saying that they want to get rid of the monarchy in Scotland. So that is actually very unpopular. The SNP get more votes when they support the monarchy, which Nicola Sturgeon knew. So Nicola Sturgeon supported the monarchy. So if he's going to be elected SNP leader, not only will we have a radical Muslim leading the SNP, we'll also have somebody who's anti-monarchist leaving the SNP, and somebody who says that they're going to be promoting LGBT in Scotland. So really, it's going to be an absolute total disaster for Scotland if he's elected. Now, Kate Forbes, on the other hand, is a committed Christian, and she's coming forward with some very good policies. And she is actually more popular, certainly among the Scots, if not among the SNP members. So we wait to see the result.
Yeah, talking about popularity, it's the time to mention that it used to be 50-50-ish whether Scotland would go on her own. It's gone down to 45. Well, I've got a poll today that says it's now only 35. So it's having a bad effect on them.
Yeah, well, it's interesting. Yeah, I mean, so now there's only 45% of Scots in the latest opinion poll I've seen, the one you've seen. I mean, I haven't seen the 35 one, but at least we're agreed that there's now quite a fairly big majority that are saying that they want to stay in the UK. Now, of course, if you look at it economically, I mean, it just makes no sense at all for Scotland to abandon their largest market, which is the United Kingdom, in favour of their second largest market, which is the EU, but very much smaller market than the United Kingdom. It just makes no sense at all economically. It also makes no sense economically either for Scotland to say we're going to abandon the pound and we're going to have our own currency. So, you know, these things which they're saying make no sense whatsoever economically. So politically, the reason for Scotland to leave the United Kingdom seems to be a very weak argument. And because it's such a weak argument, I think the numbers for it are going down and down, and likely to go down and down.
Yep. Before we leave again at Scotland, we must mention an item that crossed our desk here actually 2 or 3 weeks ago when Nicola was in her death throes. Basically about the windmills, because she's always gone on one about the fact that Scotland, with her windmills offshore and onshore, would be able to power 70% of Europe. This is another daft way of trying to get everybody on board to be self-determined, of course. And it's emerged now, in fact. There was a period of nearly 10 days in January. We had no wind at all. And so the windmills wouldn't be destroyed, basically, because they've got to have a certain amount of motion to keep them alive. They had to ship generators out, put them at the bottom of the windmills to keep them going just a little bit.
Yeah.
Again, we are being fed lies.
Yeah, what actually happened in that period is that they had to reopen coal-fired power stations which were closed or mothballed. They weren't closed as such, they were mothballed. They had to reopen them because they weren't getting enough energy from the renewable sources. I think it's very clear now that there's nothing wrong with wind power, there's nothing wrong with solar power, but we can't rely on it alone. There's no way we can rely on it alone. It's got to be part of an energy policy, which includes nuclear, includes gas, and it can even include coal. We've got to have a balanced energy policy. It could even include fracking as well. I mean, I think the economic argument for fracking is enormous, but the political argument is there, I'm not sure. But fracking is certainly something that made America self-sufficient in energy under Trump.
The same for GB Limited as well, Sid. But I'm afraid you've got the militants again winding up people and frankly, I'm going to use the word, with lies, with half-truths. It is not and never has been able to cause earthquakes. It's a complete and utter nonsense. When you think of an earthquake, we get tremors up to 4 every single day, practically, in the United Kingdom. The highest they've had is 0.06. My goodness me, what a load of nonsense people talk. Which moves us on. Let's head this one as care in the community. Because basically, if you analyse the NHS, it's bankrupting the NHS. Bed blocking, I suppose, is illustrative of this. People have had ideas about provision of nurseries. Now, this happened indeed with the provision of care homes, especially the Methodist care homes, which were the best in the country by a country mile. They had to close every one of them now because, believe it or not, the room was 2 centimetres smaller in one direction than a government think tank wanted. And we've lost the best care home in Europe. And they've done it again with nursery accommodation. They insist on one teacher, carer, to every 4 children. What a load of nonsense. No wonder it's sky high, the cost of nurseries. And let's look at it from the other end of the telescope. And what is this mad limbing rush to go back to work? Dare I even say for social reasons? Women cannot wait to get to work again. And in some cases, neglect their little ones. Is it any wonder society is breaking up, Sid, when the most important thing is not the economy, it's the family. And yes, that is the future. Of course, it does involve the economy. It comes back to bite you in every economic situation you can think of if you don't put things in order. It's women's rights again. We have the right to go back to work. Yeah, you have. But think twice about it, ladies. The most important job in the world you're neglecting.
No, it's interesting. I mean, you know, there's a big drive at the moment, they're saying, to get over 50s back to work.
Yes.
Which, to a certain extent, I can understand, because, you know, the average age of living expectancy has gone up considerably. And I believe when pensions were first introduced at 65 for men and 60 for women, they were only expected to be paid on average for about 3 or 4 years. Whereas now we've got an average life expectancy of 85, people have paid a lot more. And I think generally speaking, so pensions are paid for a lot longer. And I think generally speaking, you could say that people in their 50s and probably certainly a lot of their 60s as well are still relatively fit and are able to do work. And people in that age range have got a lot of wisdom and knowledge and understanding which they can give to industry and give to society. The whole labour market I find very, very interesting, because I remember when the silicon chip first appeared, and instead of having thousands of people running, producing cars in car plants, suddenly we could bring in robots that could produce cars with relatively few people involved. And it was the same in the steel industry. I mean, instead of having people sweating over rolling mills and everything being done by hand, suddenly you had people standing in towers pressing buttons, and all the steel was produced just by pressing buttons. And that's the reality of a massive change that went on in the 1980s. But it's interesting, at that time it's like, oh, you know, people have been made redundant, coal miners have been made redundant, steel workers have been made redundant, people have been made redundant all over. We'll never get back again to full employment, they said. It's interesting, that's what they said. And I actually said at the time, What's going to happen is that the economy will expand to take up this labor and new jobs will be found. That's what happened with the Industrial Revolution. You know, prior to the Industrial Revolution, everything was done by hand. You know, I mean, it's garments were all made by hand. Suddenly, machines were making garments, you know, and enormous amount more could be produced than could be produced prior to the Industrial Revolution. But what happened was that the economy expanded, and over time, and we went back to full employment. And that's exactly what's happened with the silicon chip. But at the moment, we've got technology advancing at a fast pace. And we are able to produce more and more with less and less people. And that's the reality of it. And we've got to think about exactly where we're going, what we're doing, and what jobs are people are involved in. See, one of the things that's happening is that there's too many people involved in employed by the government and not enough people employed by the private sector. And the government, I mean, we've talked in the past about quangos, you know, I mean, quasi-autonomous non-governmental organisations, things like Social Work England. And so Social Work England doesn't run any social work organisations. They monitor social workers and have a list of approved social workers and enforce certain stipulations over social workers, et cetera, we should just abolish it. I mean, we should have a professional standards authority that looks at standards, but we don't need all these quangos. And I see the thing is, that's what would release the employment that we need in the country. Get rid of these too many people employed by the government, not trying to send people back to work that actually don't need to go back to work unless they want to, unless they want to work.
Well, I believe in being a radical over this, and we're supposed to have 1.2 million places available, desperately available to work. We both recall, most of the nation recalls, oh my goodness me, we've all got computers. We won't need paper anymore. A few years back now, I remember visiting Portugal for the first time and getting residential status there. And I was invited, told to go to the tax office and register with the tax office. And I walked into the tax office, sat down, very helpful people there. "We've got you all on our machine," he said. I said, "I'm sure you have." He was joking, of course. And I said, "Hang on, what's that stack of papers?" And literally all the back of his office, floor to ceiling, were A4 papers. He said, "Oh, well, there we are. I put things in the computer, it prints it all out, and that's what happens." It's a nonsense, and it's equally a nonsense about employment. I believe, Sid, there are many positions in employment, and dare I even say, especially fit for the ladies, of over-egging the data thing. "Oh, we've got to have data for this." Well, a computer will spew out rubbish, rubbish in, rubbish out, all its life with pots and pots of data. And then it's stuck at the back of the blooming office in piles of paper. Nothing happens to it. I believe there is job creation over job creation, and we just do not need it. We need people in pivotal jobs, especially the care home.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think what I would say is there's over-regulation, which is what I was talking about earlier.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, some of the things you're talking about are archives, and sometimes things from the past need to be archived and so on and so forth. But undoubtedly, we've got far too much regulation. I mean, one of the other examples I came across was the Electoral Commission, which is another quango. And prior to the last general election, we changed our logo in the Christian People's Alliance, and we produced a new logo. We sent it to the Electoral Commission for approval. After several weeks, we got a message back saying that the logo had to have the name of the party written underneath it, which was nonsense, because the ballot paper has the name of the party on it and then the logo next to it. So you don't need the logo as well written, you know, the name of the party written under the logo. That's what they said. Anyway, we wrote the name of the party under the logo. And then they, after a few weeks, they came back and said, "You haven't written it big enough. you've got to write it big. And well, they said what size it had to be written. That didn't make any sense unless you knew what the size of the logo was. Anyway, we finally got it right. We got the new logo with the name of the party printed underneath with the size that they wanted. Sent it back to them. Before we heard back from them, general election was called. So we got onto them and said, come on, we need to have the logo approved. Oh, we can't make a decision now. We're not approving any more logos now before this general election. Sorry, your logo can't be approved. So over a period of 3 or 4 months, they failed to approve what was a simple logo. Now, if you contrast that, people know what I'm talking about, if you contrast that with the fact that during a general election, every party has a right to send an election address through the Royal Mail to every member of a constituency. Now, the Royal Mail has to approve the content of the election address. And they don't have a lot of time because obviously, you know, you draft it, you send it off for approval, you have to send it to the printer, then they have to get it back to the post office to put out through the doors, all in the space of a very short period of time. So the post office normally return in one day or next day, either yes, it's approved or no, it's not approved for these reasons. Now, that is quite complicated. They've got to look at an entire election address and establish whether this entire election address fits with these with post office standards or whether it includes libel or whether it includes things that they can't put out. Now, you contrast that with the Electoral Commission approving a logo. You know, and it just makes utter nonsense. And you think, you know, the Electoral Commission have 143 million turnover the last time I looked. It's probably gone up now. It's probably more like 180 million now. But that's the last time I looked. And you sort of think, what are they doing with this 143 million pounds a year? I mean, they're just creating jobs. You know, really, it's just ridiculous. And that's just another example of people employed in jobs that we absolutely don't need, that we should get rid of and focus on real important issues that matter.
Absolutely. And it's not the fact that they get paid for doing nothing. In effect, they're blocking other things going through. It's a double whammy. It's awful. Which brings us back to awfulness and the BBC. The BBC 0, Lineker 1. I've never seen such an amount of rubbish over a whole week. What they were planning doing this for, were they hiding the budget, which takes place, of course, tomorrow? Were they covering up for something else? But important measures have just gone second and third in the news items. And it's Gary Lineker. Now, I'm going to throw more spanners in the work here. Because I know he's a hero, maybe he's an ex-hero of yours, Sid. Well, I was on the football field, Leicester. But I remember him in the very early years being brought on for the first of match of the day renewals, call it. And he was, bless him, truly awful. He is the most wooden presenter I've come across in my life. Now, GB News has got a lot of new presenters coming on, and sure enough, for the first week, they're a bit wooden, and then they get into it. But let me tell you, with Gary Lineker, he was wooden for at least 3 months. What, I used to say, what is he doing there? I mean, he's completely unschooled, he's a complete amateur, and it shows. Now, why should they put up with him that long in the first place? And then you look at his political career, and it's woke in the extreme. And these people are walking out with him, and they're using, I'm talking about his pals, Mr. Wright, etc. They're walking out with him. And they're talking union language. Oh, we got to show solidarity. Really? What's behind all this? Well, it's a grey area, said the BBC. We'd like to rethink it's a grey area. Now, if they meant Sue Gray, I could understand it because that's all part of it, of course. But this is the colour grey. And he's not apologizing. In fact, it's gone worse. Don't forget, in the beginning, his first half victory, he follows it up, and I will read it. What has happened to me is nothing compared with what happened to the illegal immigrants, I'm paraphrasing, that are coming over the water. Now, he's followed that up by lots of statements. He's never apologised. The BBC have had to apologise. What is going on? I'll tell you one thing. It is beyond dispute that he and the BBC, the wokes of the BBC, the elites of the BBC, and this is why he stayed there so long, are out of the same pod, Sid.
Okay, yes. Now, I firmly believe that if the BBC really believed in impartiality, they would have taken proper action and dismissed Gary Lineker and anybody else who was standing with him in solidarity, including Ian Wright and Alan Shearer, who, if they refused to work, I mean, they couldn't, they needn't just be dismissed. They could have just literally been told, either you come back to work and you work normally, or you will be dismissed. And so they should be given a chance, obviously. But that's what they've done, if they really believed in impartiality. Now, if we get onto the substance of what we're talking about, Gary Lineker said that the proposals that the government was putting forward to control illegal immigration were similar to what was going on in Germany in the 30s, and was something that should be opposed by all. Now, in Germany in the 30s, Jews were being targeted. They were forced to wear stars. And of course, it all culminated in the Holocaust, which happened later on, when they were literally gassed and killed. Now, to argue that what the government is trying to do to control illegal immigration is similar to what Germany was doing in the 30s is completely and utterly ridiculous. But the problem is that Gary Lineker is a sports commentator. He's not a political commentator. If he was on a political panel where other people could challenge him or challenge what he was saying and challenge his views, he would be very quickly made to look stupid. Because frankly, what he said was ridiculous. It's stupid because he doesn't stand up for a moment in a comparison. Now, that's the reality of it. Of course, you see, the thing is, it's not the first time he's done this. He's done it repeatedly. And I was frankly furious when in Sports Personality of the Year one year, Tyson Fury had become world champion in boxing and, you know, tremendous achievements. And Gary Lineker starts talking to him about same-sex marriage and, you know, why are you opposing same-sex marriage in the middle of Sports Personality of the Year? And you think, hold on a minute, this is utterly and completely inappropriate. You know, if you really want to debate same-sex marriage, debate it with somebody who knows a lot about it, not to a boxer in the middle of Sports Personality of the Year. It's just totally inappropriate. And, you know, if Gary Lineker wants to come onto a political programme and debate politics, let him do it. Let him do it. I've got no problem with that whatsoever. See, some people are saying that this is all about free speech. It's not about free speech. The reality is Gary Lineker is paid $1.3 million a year to present sports programmes. That's what he's paid for. That's what he's paid to do by the BBC. Now, if he wants to resign from that position and become a political commentator and take part in political programmes, fine. He's got every right to express his point of view. I've got no problem with that. But what he's doing at the moment is an abuse of position. That's why it's not about free speech. It's about abuse of position. And because he's abused his position, I'm afraid he should be sacked. Now, one other thing that I find very, very interesting is that yesterday I was looking at a lot of polls and different polls were coming in. And the first poll I saw said 85% of people said that Gary Lineker should be sacked. And then another poll came in, it was 92% of people should be sacked. And then I saw, I was referring to these polls on social media, and somebody else came in on social media and was saying, oh, I'm surprised it's not 100%. But almost everyone that he's speaking to is saying, yes, Gary Lineker should be sacked. So it's very interesting. Gary Lineker, because of his political views, has lost the confidence of the public. And that's another reason why the BBC should say enough.
Interesting stuff. I'm going to go on some more interesting stuff. Rishi, he's decided, well, we think he's decided to give $5 billion extra to the defence budget. Now, I used to always put defence on the back burner. But I don't do it any longer, Sid, because I realise how much we as a country need that. We're way ahead, especially in military tactics and software. We're keeping Europe safe, as it turns out. This is why the east of Europe is very pro-GB at the moment, because they cannot cope with these super high-powered missiles that travel seven times as fast, and you can't shoot them down, but you can get them with some clever algorithms, and we've got them. Nobody else has. So the only strength you're going to get with certain people, and in Europe generally, is to be a very good power. This very day, as you well know, Australia and the US and the UK have got together about the submarines. The Chinese are way behind on submarines. They're behind on certain things. And they're kicking off something rotten. So this must be a good agreement. But there we are. How much will come out in the budget? Lots of projections, especially on taxes, company taxes. But one must remind ourselves that, yes, corporation taxes have gone from 19 to 25, but it's not that simple, because in most of the countries, I mean, it really is low. In Southern Ireland, how they get away with it, you tell me. But when you've got high rates of tax, and actually Hunt is right when he says we're still way more generous than other people, because you can offset quite a lot of that tax through your accounts. So in fact, yes, if you're making a fortune as a mega company, you'll be paying 25%, but lots of people are only paying, well, another, as it was before, and even less. So all is not what it seems in the headlines, Sid.
Yes, well, you're referring to corporation tax, which, if people don't know, is a tax on profits. Now, obviously, when it comes to profits, you can offset losses or any expenses against your profits. But they have to be genuine expenses. You can't just, I mean, one thing you're not allowed to offset, for instance, is meals. So, I mean, entertainment. So you can't just say, oh, well, I'm going to take all my employees out and we're going to have a great bash up and, you know, we're going to spend £5,000 on a night out for all the employees, and that will be a company expense. It's not. It's not.
Those were the happy days, Sid.
Well, it's you know, there are, all I'm saying is that there are rules as to what is allowed as a company expense and what isn't. So, you know, you can obviously, if you make losses, then any losses can be offset against profits. You can make losses on property, make losses on machinery. You can buy a whole load of machinery, which can then devalue, and all that can be offset against your profits, which is, you know, just fair enough, you know, but there are rules. Now, but I think it's very important to have a low rate of corporation tax. You see, one of the things that Donald Trump did was to cut corporation tax quite drastically. I mean, it was 33% in America, and he cut it right down to, I think it was 21%. He wanted to get it lower than that. He wanted it down to 15, but they wouldn't let him cut it down to 15. I think he got it down to 21. But one of the results of what he did was there were a large number of companies that actually started, well, immediately cancelled their new factories in Mexico and decided to build their new factories in the United States. And Trump also gave them an incentive to do that by imposing tariffs on people importing stuff from Mexico. So he shifted the whole balance to make it as financial incentive for companies to invest in the United States and do business in the United States. He made the United States business friendly. There was a cost to it, but it's interesting if you actually have a look at the debt overall until COVID. If you know, if you remove COVID for a minute and say up to COVID striking, as a percentage of GDP, debt in America was virtually constant. There was no increase. So although he cut corporation tax drastically, there was actually not an increase in debt before COVID struck. Obviously, after COVID struck, the situation was very different. But that's another issue. But it's very important for a country to be business friendly, helping, supporting business in your country, imposing tariffs if they need to be imposed to stop steel or whatever being dumped in the country, which will undermine your industry. And that's something which I'm afraid, following the last budget, when we increased corporation tax from 19 to 25, set us in reverse, seriously in reverse. And we have to repeal that increase in the budget tomorrow. We really do. And I very much hope that Jeremy Hunt will. A lot of people just don't understand corporation tax because it's not something which, you know, everyone sort of looks at and follows. People follow the rate of inflation. They follow how much income tax is. They follow how much VAT is. They don't follow the rate of corporation tax. So it's something you can increase without losing votes. But if you're damaging your industry, you're going to damage the whole country. And I'm afraid there is a cost, a severe cost.
Well, I do hope you're right, Sid, but I've got a feeling it won't happen. I've got a feeling it'll happen in 12 months' time when they want to really pull in the votes, and then they may lower it back down again, or half as much anyway. I want to talk something about the pandemic, if we could. And again, I'll stick my head over the parapet and risk being shot at. It's now been 3 years-ish. There are a plethora of people, even the Donald was looking at China and saying, it's escaped from the lab. Now, that was a heinous crime to say that. All the big boys, I'm talking about social media big boys, if you dare say that, took you down straight away. The World Health Organization, oh dear, hand in glove with WHO. Of course, it's China. You couldn't say anything about China. And more people are now getting convinced. In fact, number 10 is seriously investigating this as we speak. And to me, it's been obvious from day one. And why do I say that? Well, let's look at what happened. There were three basic waves of the pandemic. The first wave, you can see why people panicked. Well, I can, because they knew what we didn't know, how lethal this germ could have been escaping from a lab. It was not your normal pandemic. So when the bad news came out, especially Italy, people sat up and saw all these deaths, panicked, everybody locked down. Few exceptions, Sweden, etc. Three or four exceptions that have done very well. They didn't. But you could see why the world panicked. And there we were waiting for deaths. Now we can look back and see who died. It was the over 80s with multiple morbidities, which you can understand. That's normal, if you like, inverted commas, selection. And it wasn't as bad, even the first wave, when it was a lot more lethal than it is now. And then we had the second wave. And the politicians decided, we like this power. We'll lock down everybody again. That was utter nonsense. It's killed economies. Killed millions of people with their own cancer, heart, etc. problems that were just overlooked. And then there was the shutdown of the third, which is unforgivable, as the Matt Hancock WhatsApp farce is proving. And here we are, Sid. Some people are talking now. Let's get the mask back on. What? Williamson got it right. He didn't want the kids out of school. He didn't want them in masks. And he was just jumped upon. Now, thinking back, Sid, my goodness me, we have been misled grossly. We're going to pay for this for a generation. And I prophesy that it won't be long before the boys start saying, yeah, this is really what happened, and we got it wrong.
Yes. I mean, the only thing I would say is, I mean, obviously, I agree absolutely with everything you've said. The only thing you perhaps missed out was the fact that also it was proven that ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine worked against the disease, but they were banned. It's yep. Like, what? Why are they banned? I mean, you know, it's like, you know, it's the authorities could easily have said that we don't recommend these treatments. We believe that there are better treatments. However, you know, if you want to try them, by all means, try them. But instead of taking that approach, they said it's forbidden, absolutely forbidden for anyone to have any ivermectin or any hydroxychloroquine. You know, they must not under any circumstances be, you know, be made available. And it's like, well, what's going on? And to me, the biggest culprit in all this is the World Health Organization. And I say that because they are the international body that is supposed to be responsible. And they were the body that's putting out in the first place the fact that, oh, this has come from nature, it's come from bats and so on and so forth. They said very clearly, there's no evidence of human-to-human transmission. It's only been transmitted from in the animal kingdom or from the animal kingdom to humans. There's no evidence that it can be transmitted from one human to another. And they said that for several months, and it's obviously false information, as well as what I've just said about ivermectin. And then we come to the vaccine, and the World Health Organization was saying everybody in the world has to be vaccinated, and we must promote vaccine more in poor countries, and rich countries have got to give more vaccine to poor countries, otherwise we'll never stamp out the vaccine in poor countries. Actually, Africa, which was the least vaccinated, had the least problems with the disease. That's the truth. So what the World Health Organization was saying was completely false. And whereas initially we were told, Pfizer said, this vaccine is more than 90% proof against the disease. More, you know, there's less than 10% of people will catch the disease if they're vaccinated. That turned out to be completely false. The majority of people that were vaccinated later on caught the disease. It had very little effect at all. So, you know, it's like they were just giving us false information over and over again. And what is Joe Biden's response to all this false information put out by the World Health Organization? He has decided in any future pandemic, whatever the World Health Organization decides, the United States will implement, and without asking any questions. The World Health Organization will decide the policy of the American government in future, in any future pandemic. That's what he's decided. Oh dear.
Oh, well, dear. So, globalism has won.
Yes, well, yes, exactly. I mean, and you could say, well, perhaps this is all part of creating a one world government. May well be. But if it is, they're making a lot of mistakes because it just looks stupid. I mean, how do you put an organization in charge that's made so many obvious mistakes in the process, and now they say next time we'll let you make all the decisions and not ask any questions? I mean, it's just mad. The only conclusion you can come to is that they've got another agenda there, and their agenda is not the health of the world. There's another agenda going on behind the scenes. That's undoubtedly true.
Yeah. Well, let's finish off with another comment from Matt before we give our last item here. And again, the cartoon is two or three civil servants gathered together in Whitehall, and one is saying, some people in Whitehall believe Hancock was developed in a Wuhan lab. We won't give him any more accolade. He and Lineker are good bedmates, aren't they? If that's the right term. A piece of paper's just been handed to me about childcare workers. We touched on this earlier. That coming out of the budget, and this is quite reliable. We'll see how reliable it is tomorrow. That care workers, those employed in nurseries, will be given a £500 bunk to get a job there and look after more of our kids. Sorry, you've got that wrong. Why not give the ladies more chance to stay at home and bung those parents that know what their child wants and needs? Give them, as many other countries do, much better child allowances. There is danger in that. It's got to be done carefully, that people are not taking advantage of it. But you can achieve that. Lastly, Sid, it's devolution time. And I believe in madness, because one of the things that will come out in the next few months, and maybe it'll come out of the budget, is that Birmingham and Manchester are about to be handed over the education of its children. And Whitehall wants to give it billions. So it won't be central government organisation. It will be the locality that decides what teachers get paid, what schooling they have to put up with. So it depends on which woke politician, mayor, is in charge. It's going to be a nightmare.
Yeah, I don't really know the details of that, because, I mean, I was a councillor myself and sat on an education committee and was involved in appointing chief education officers at a time when the local authority was responsible for all the schools. Bit by bit, we've had a situation where we've had academies and less responsibility of central or local government over schools, and more responsibility for governors of schools to decide the policies of a school and so on and so forth. So it's not going to be easy for them suddenly to go back to where the local authority or some mayor suddenly controls all the policies in all the schools again, unless they're going to abolish all the academies. But I don't think that's going to happen. But I think what's a far greater concern is some of these umbrella policies, particularly relating to things like relationship and sex education, where things being taught in schools imposed by Ofsted are completely unacceptable. It's that sort of thing, to me, which we really need to get to grips with, not the nitty-gritty of how a school is run.
Finally, if you want devolution for big cities, and the small cities will come along in due course, of course, let's look for Wales. And we have mentioned this on another programme before. The incumbent in Wales decides that in same-sex toilets and men's toilets, you have to have machines now that dispense tampons. What has happened there, of course, the men have gone into their toilet and got these free and just handed them to their girlfriends and wives. That's what's going to happen on a bigger scale with education. And how about this one? This very day, 1 hour ago, it was advertised that Scotland are prepared to go ultra green. And if you buy a tinny, whether it contains alcohol or Coca-Cola, you will pay 20p extra on every can, so that it will make you go to a machine and deliver the aluminium back into that machine in the centre of your city or wherever these machines are going to be put. So instead of paying 100 a euro European terms, you'll be paying €1.20 for your Coca-Cola. Then you cross the border and get it for €1. Well, you don't, it's £1 or whatever it is between Britain, between Scotland and England. That's the sort of mad policy, Sid, that comes out of giving people power.
Yeah, well, yes. I mean, at the end of the day, you know, but people have got to think about the economic implications of everything they're doing. It is a fact, I know, because I was involved very closely with somebody responsible for recycling. And he said by far the most profitable thing that we do in recycling is recycling cans, aluminium cans and whatever, because they are worth quite a lot of money. A lot of the recycling, like the plastics, very, very difficult to make any money out of plastics recycling. It's virtually worthless, which is why, unfortunately, large numbers of plastics just end up dumped in the sea or somewhere, because there's literally no money in recycling plastics.
Indeed, it goes to India, Sid, as you well know, and it's just tossed in the sea there. So it does twice as much damage as it ever did. We've got to go. We've scratched the surface, but hopefully that surface will remain scratched and people will start scratching their heads and thinking, wow, I didn't realise that. We should do something about it. Maybe they want to vote for your party.
Come on, it'd be lovely. We need more candidates standing for CPA. It's you know, potentially we can get a lot of votes, but we can't get votes if we don't have candidates. So anyone watching that wants to stand for us, info@cpaparty.net, please.
Yeah, he's allowed one promo. That's it. Bless you, Sid. We will see you next week. Thank you so much.